You're listening to the NASM CPT Podcast with Rick Ritchie, winner of the Share Care Emmy Award for Social Storytelling and the official podcast of the National Academy of Sports Medicine.
Hey, y'all, and welcome to the NASM CPT Podcast. My name is Rick Ritchie, and today we're going to be talking about nutritional programming strategies for body composition change. And we are fortunate enough to have a guest with us who wrote a chapter in the bodybuilding and physique coaching course. We have Dr. Joseph Munoz here with us. Dr. Munoz, welcome and thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Rich. Pleasure to be on the episode and excited for today's conversation.
Very cool. Well, tell us a little bit, start it off by telling us a little bit about you, your background, your education, what it is that you currently do for work, and then we'll just start shooting out some questions and have a conversation about it.
Yeah, I'll keep my background short because I feel like I could talk about this for a long time. But pretty much, you know, ever since I was a young kid, I saw my parents working out regularly. And I've been intrigued with body composition and bodybuilding pretty much ever since. Even though I'm not the most muscular guy, I train hard and try to learn the science really about improving body composition. So I did my undergraduate at Florida State University in nutrition sciences, did my PhD there as well in nutrition. And then I did a postdoctoral fellowship in sports nutrition under Dr. Michael Ormsby. And pretty much when you're doing a doctoral degree, really your training is to be a professor at a university. And for numerous reasons, I didn't feel like that was necessarily what I wanted to do. So I reached out to somebody who I really respected in the field, Dr. Lane Norton. I'm sure many of the listeners are probably familiar with him. And I really just reached out and I was like, hey, I know you have a similar educational background to myself. I'd love to learn, you know, about your career and how you got to where you got to, and because I pretty much want to do the same thing. And so when I finished work, sent him that email, he was like, hey, we have some opportunities with our company if you'd like to perhaps coach some individuals and use an evidence-based approach to your coaching. And I was like, that's right up my alley, right? I also worked as a personal trainer during graduate school. So transitioning into this was pretty much something that I thought would be a perfect fit for me. And I was right. It was a perfect fit. So now I work coaching individuals with nutrition and exercise who want to improve body composition. My coaching is highly focused on education. I really do think education is one of the most important components of having long-term success in terms of changing your physique, right? Especially for general population adults who perhaps are bombarded every day with both good and bad information, and it can be information overload and they don't necessarily know what to do. So I like to present information in like a very easy and simple to understand way that they can implement into their daily life to help improve their physique and really reach their body composition related goals. So that's pretty much what I do.
Nice. I think that's really important for us and our clients that when we work with them, you know, sometimes we like to get super heady and sometimes that's because we want our clients to be like, oh my goodness, you're so smart. Yeah. But it doesn't mean that it's received the best way. Like you're smart, but how do I apply it if I don't know entirely what it is you're saying? So I think that's great. And I tell people all the time, like I'm not the smartest person, but I think that through my schooling, it took me so long and I had to break it down in such a way for me to get it that it actually helps to make me a good teacher. Because if I can break it down for me to understand it, you could probably understand it too. So with that, we'll move forward on it. I want to know, first of all, how did you get connected with NASM to become an author for the course that you wrote? And then tell us about that course, that chapter.
Yeah. As well. So I've been going to the NASM conferences pretty much just part of my educational program during my doctoral degree and postdoctoral fellowship as well, because typically the graduate students will go to annual conferences in the areas that they're like interested in, right? So I would go to the NASM conferences there, but I wasn't really connected with anybody. And then actually at one of the ISSN conferences, I met Dr. Guillermo Escalante. Oh, yeah. And him and I hit it off pretty well. Our personalities clicked well, and we just maintained conversation through social media. And he reached out to me for the course, actually. He knows what I do. He knows Lane. He knows my work ethic. So he reached out to me like, hey, we're going to work on this course. There's a couple of chapters that you could perhaps, your expertise would serve well in. And he gave me the options. He's like, just choose the one you're interested in. So I went with the nutrition chapter for the bodybuilding course. Cause that's really like what I think is like the meat and potatoes of what I know and what I really like teaching too.
Okay. All right. Well, then let's get into some of those things. So, Joseph, I want to know a little bit more about, and I think this is good for our CPTs, our certified personal trainers, to know, and they'll get a lot more of this in the physique and bodybuilding coach course. But can you just talk to us about how it is that you track calories? How do you make changes to your plan? And let's just start digging in.
Yeah, let's start at the most basic level, right? When people say, and we'll talk both here from general public standpoint and even perhaps physique enthusiasts, right? The goal when somebody's trying to improve their body composition is twofold. They're trying to build muscle and they're trying to lose body fat, right? That's what we would call improving body composition. I guess that word improving is relatively arbitrary, but from what we consider improving, it's build muscle, lose body fat, right? And so our goal as coaches is really to give our clients the best recommendations possible to increase their likelihood of reaching that goal. And when it comes to building muscle and losing body fat, these are really two separate goals that we should tackle individually, right? And I think we can focus on losing body fat first, since I feel like the majority of individuals want to get leaner, right? And we can talk about calories, programming those macronutrients and everything for an individual who wants to lose weight, and then the recommendations are actually very similar for somebody who's trying to build muscle, essentially in like the opposite order. So to lose weight, you decrease calories, right? To gain weight, increase calories, increase muscle size. So the first step we need to establish as a coach is, what's the caloric requirement for our clients, right? Because at the end of the day, yes, food choices matter, right? There are different variables that will influence how easy it is for you to lose weight or gain weight. But at the most basic level, the concept of energy balance is what dictates whether somebody gains or loses weight, right? And energy balance is just, as the name implies, the balance between how much energy you consume, aka calories from your diet, and how much energy your body expends, right? And sometimes people like to think that's an overly simplistic view of weight loss or weight gain. But in the most basic sense, that is really what matters. Now, there's a number of variables that will influence both sides of that equation, right? It's not just, I mean, it is eat less than you burn to lose fat, but it gets more complex than that when we start adding.
I hope so, because I don't think you got a PhD to learn that.
No, definitely not, right? Actually, my PhD was looking at the effects of dried plum consumption on bone health in osteopenic men. But that's a topic.
Isn't it amazing how specific the PhD studies get?
It's amazing and ridiculous at the same time.
Yeah.
But yeah, going back to the general topic, right? If you want to get leaner, if you want to lose some body fat, the first question you should be asking yourself is, okay, well, how much should I eat, right? How many calories do I need to consume to be on track to reach my goal? And there's a sweet spot, right? Because you know you have to eat less than your body expends, but you don't want to eat so little that you're starving yourself. And there's some potential risks of that as well that we can go into in a little bit. So to determine the appropriate number of calories you need to consume, the first thing you need to ask yourself is, well, how many calories is my body burns, right? Which is what we call our maintenance calories. It's just the number of calories required to maintain your body weight. And from there, you can then adjust your caloric intake, whether you're trying to gain or lose weight, right? So how do we determine what our maintenance calories are? Well, there's different methods. There's one method, which I think is the most accurate that I'll share at the end, but it's also the most time consuming. Essentially, what you can do is use predictive equations, right? I know NASM has a landing page with some predictive equations to determine your maintenance calories, but there's a number of equations online that have been developed in different populations, right? And essentially these equations take into account your height, your weight, your sex, your body composition, and then you'll take those numbers and it'll spit out a number. And that number is what we call your BMR, your basal metabolic rate, okay? So these equations will predict your basal metabolic rate based off of your anthropometric measures. Again, like your height, weight, all that stuff. Now, your BMR, your basal metabolic rate, is one component of your total daily energy expenditure. Okay, so your BMR is not equivalent to your maintenance calories. It's just one component of your maintenance calories. And in general, BMR for most people takes between takes up between 50 and 70% of your total daily energy expenditure. And that number is going to vary based on how physically active you are, right? Because if you're very physically active, then your BMR is going to be a lower percentage because a larger percentage is coming from physical activity. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, for most people, BMR is between 50 and 70%. And then you can estimate your maintenance calories using your predicted BMR by multiplying it by an activity factor, right? And I won't get into the specific numbers here, but it's like if you're very sedentary, you multiply it by like 1.1, right? And if you're extremely active, that activity factor might be up to like 1.9, which is almost twice your BMR, right? And the activity factors, they have descriptions, right? Based on how physically active you are. So it'll say sedentary, and it'll give a description of sedentary. Like you don't move much, you sit at work all day, you don't get that many steps, you don't exercise. And then extremely active, which is like the complete opposite end, is like you're working out twice per day, your job is very active, you're rarely sitting down, right? So you choose the activity factor that most closely resembles what your level of physical activity is, multiply that by your BMR, and then you have your maintenance calories, right? And then from your maintenance calories, you adjust that, again, determining on whether you're trying to gain or lose weight. So you can use the predictive equations, multiply by an activity factor to estimate your maintenance calories. And my apologies if my dog is barking. I might have to tell him to get away from here in a second. But All right. So aside from that, you've now pretty much estimated your maintenance calories. Where do you go from there, right? You know you need to eat less than your maintenance calories, but by how much, right? Actually, before we get into that, I mentioned there are two ways of estimating your maintenance calories. Besides using predictive equations, the most accurate way is to simply just track your calories and track your body weight over a period of time, perhaps 2 or 3 weeks, right? And if your caloric intake is such that your body weight is relatively stable, then you can be pretty confident that you're consuming what's called your maintenance calories, right? That's a much simpler way, but more time consuming because it does require 2 to 3 weeks. What I recommend—
And is there a certain time where you're supposed to weigh yourself? Are you supposed to do it before a movement or after a bowel movement? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, so in terms of daily weighing, we always recommend clients to, or anybody really, to take their weight in the morning in a fasted state, minimal clothing, ideally after a bowel movement, right? Because it's going to be the most accurate representation of your body weight. Essentially, all of these little variables that we just mentioned, right? Food intake, bowel movement, clothing. These are all variables that will influence your body weight. So you want to remove as much of the variability as possible. So as much as you can control for, that's ideally what you want to do, right? So when you weigh yourself, and tracking your calories, seeing if they're relatively similar, body weight staying stable, that means you're at maintenance calories. I think the best approach is to use the equations, estimate your maintenance calories, and then use that estimate, track your calories for a couple of weeks, and see if it's accurate to maintain your body weight. Now, once you've established your maintenance calories, let's say you're trying to lose weight, you need to decrease your caloric intake, right? Given that everything else stays the same. But what's an appropriate amount to decrease your caloric intake by? Well, it's really going to depend, right? I like to tell people that slower weight loss is typically better. You have better weight loss outcomes, but I do also understand that when it comes to competitors, sometimes they need to reach a certain weight by a certain period of time, right? And they don't have the luxury of losing weight as slowly as possible. The reasons why I like to stress losing weight slowly is for several reasons. One, it really focuses on like habit formation, right? I think the key to long-term success with improving your physique is really implementing habits that align with the lifestyle that you want to have, right? Like sure, tracking calories is fine, but you need time to develop other healthy lifestyle habits along the way. And giving yourself ample time is a way to facilitate that. Two, you're not starving yourself, so it doesn't feel that miserable. And three, which kind of goes with number two, it's more sustainable and easier to adhere to, right? Dietary adherence is incredibly important. So what's a rate of weight loss that's realistic? Well, from my experience working with most clients, I do think between 0.4 and 1% of total body weight loss per week is a fair range, where individuals who are perhaps leaner or more experienced should err on the side of caution, be losing weight at a slower rate, and perhaps somebody who is more overweight and has more fat to lose can afford to lose weight at a slightly quicker rate, right? And then in terms of reducing calories from your maintenance calories, anywhere between 10 to 20% should be a good starting point, right? Again, I think it's incredibly important to stress that none of these numbers are exact, right? These are just general ballparks for you to start somewhere. And the really important part is, how do you make adjustments after you get started, right? So gonna throw out random numbers here. Let's say my maintenance calories are 2,500 calories per day, and I want to lose some weight, but I'm fine doing it at a slow rate of about 0.4% per week, okay? And I weigh about 200 pounds. Let's say I'm gonna start by dropping my calories 20% below my maintenance, right? 20% of 2,500, that's 500 calories. So I'm gonna start consuming 2,000 calories. Everything we've talked to this point is just starting recommendations. Where are you going to start, right? The magic really lies in how you tailor that program over time, right? So let's say I'm consuming 2,000 calories. I'm starting to track my body weight. One thing that I tell everybody to do is, even though you track your body weight daily, do not focus on the daily body weight, because your body weight can fluctuate from day to day based on a number of variables, right? You could be doing everything perfectly fine, wake up a little bit heavier tomorrow just because you had dinner later than usual. So don't worry on the daily fluctuations. The reason you take the daily weight is to get a weekly average, right? And then what you can compare is that weekly average over time. The weekly average will have less fluctuation than the daily average. So it's a better marker, right? But even then, the weekly average can have some fluctuation. And then you can say a bi-weekly average is arguably better than a weekly average. And then a monthly average is arguably better than a bi-weekly average. But then there's practicality too, right? You're not going to make changes. You're not going to wait a whole month to make a change to your plan if nothing's going on, right? So I do personally use weekly averages. And then what I do is track my rate of weight change and see if I'm on target, or I or my clients are on target with their projected weight, right? Rate of weight change. If they are, perfect. No changes need to be made to the plan. And if they're not, then we need to make some changes to the plan, right? So using myself an example again, let's say I'm 500 calories below maintenance, 20%. So I'm eating 2000 calories. I'm trying to lose about 0.4% of total body weight per week. So for me, that would be about 0.8 pounds. And it's never exact, right? I give everybody a range. So if I'm trying to lose about 0.8 pounds per week, as long as I'm like between 0.6 and 1 pound, that's usually a good range, because again, you need a margin of error there, right? So let's say week one, week two, I'm losing weight. Boom, everything is perfect within the targeted rate. I'm not making any changes to my plan, right? I'm eating 2,000 calories. I'm losing the weight that I'm expected to lose on a weekly basis. There's no need for any drastic changes. Now, after a couple of weeks, as my weight starts to decrease, my energy expenditure is going to start to decrease, because your body weight is a big component of your BMR, right? So energy expenditure slowly starts to decrease. Again, given that I haven't made any intentional changes to my physical activity, okay? We're keeping that the same. Energy expenditure slowly starts to decrease at a certain point, and it's hard to predict because it'll be different for everybody. But after a certain period of time, what was once a certain degree of a calorie deficit for me no longer is, right? I might be losing weight at a much slower rate, or actually not losing weight at all, because what used to be a deficit is now my maintenance, as that energy expenditure component starts to decrease, right? At which point you have to make changes to your plan if your goal is still to continue to lose weight, right? And in general, you don't have to make any drastic changes. If you've been losing weight at a certain caloric intake and it's slowing down, dropping your calories by an additional 150 to 200 calories should suffice, right? An alternative would be to increase your physical activity in a structured fashion as well, but we're focusing on nutrition here, right? For some of my clients, I'll recommend them doing a certain amount of cardio per week if perhaps dropping their calories anymore isn't realistic, right? Maybe they're telling me they're hungry, or like they just much rather move more than eat less, which is the case with many people, right? And just how we would decrease calories in a very intentional fashion we would increase physical activity in an intentional fashion as well, right? For nutrition, I ask clients to track their caloric intake and their macronutrients. But for physical activity, I also track their workouts, and I'll track, I think one very important variable is their daily step count, right? Because we only exercise for so long every day, but ideally we should be getting steps throughout the day, right? And perhaps if a client of mine is walking 5,000 steps per day and they get to a point where their weight plateaus, I might actually even give them the option like, hey, would you rather have a slight decrement in your calories or a slight bump up in your physical activity? It's kind of 50-50, right? Some people just want to move a little bit more. I'm like, all right, we'll keep the calories the same, but instead of 5,000 steps, let's go ahead and bump it up to 7,000. That's a pretty big increase. Maybe let's bump it up to 6,000 or 6,500. We might do that for a week or two and track the weight and see how it responds, right? So what I think is really important here and the focus of this or the core of this message is like the exact numbers or the amount you change things by isn't nearly as important as having a structured method of making change when progress does slow down, right? I think these options like decreasing calories by 200 calories versus like 300 or 400 calories or increasing steps by 1,000 or increasing an additional day of resistance training, these are all viable options. And in different scenarios, one might be better than the other. And it really is the role of the coach alongside with the client to determine which one is most appropriate in the given situation, right?
When it comes to you tracking these calories, sorry to jump in there, no, but when it comes to tracking it, what are you suggesting? Are you being very specific with everyone, write everything down? I want calories to the single digit, how much calories you've got estimated? Or is it like, this is what you usually eat, kind of try to decrease that by 20%. How are you encouraging your clients or patients to do?
Yeah, the rigidity of the plan is dependent on what the person's trying to accomplish, right? If somebody is like a competitive bodybuilder and they're going to compete in 16 weeks, then yeah, I want them to be as exact and as rigid as possible.
Okay.
Because these small variables matter, right? Like, for example, if we want to track their weight over the 16 weeks, and we just talked about how different variables can influence daily body weight, right? One of those variables, for example, being fiber intake, right? And if this person like one day eats a super high fiber, high carbohydrate diet, and then the next week they're the opposite of that, high fat, low carb, over time, it really doesn't matter for weight loss because energy balance matters. But the issue is that in the short term, that's going to introduce a lot of variability. So it's going to be a little bit harder to determine what's actually happening with those averages, right? So for somebody who's trying to compete or something like that in a short period of time, who needs to be very strict, I do think being strict with everything and being as exact as possible is beneficial, right? Okay. But now you have the opposite of that, of somebody who's just learning and perhaps just into this whole nutrition and fitness thing for lifestyle purposes, right? Maybe it's someone who's in their 40s or their 50s, they're slightly overweight, their doctor told them they have elevated blood pressure, they want to make some changes. That person doesn't need to be nearly as strict or exact, right? Usually what I do is give them a calorie target, but I'm like, hey, as long as you're within 5 or 10% of this, it doesn't matter, right? Because I explained to them that being in an energy deficit is not eating a specific number of calories, it's a range, right? And let's say you're in a 20% deficit. If you go slightly above the recommendation, you're still in a deficit. You might lose weight a little bit slower, but who cares? Progress is progress. That's one thing I really try to emphasize to my clients, right?
Yeah, nice.
So I give them a general calorie target. I give them a range. 5, 10% is cool. And then I give them specific, I wouldn't even say specific. I give them macronutrient targets. And the only specific one that I do ask for them to hit every day is protein, right? Because for body composition, for building muscle, we do want to make sure we're eating a sufficient amount of protein every day, because we don't really store protein that can be used later, right? The same way we could store carbohydrates as glycogen, for example. But it is very, very laid back. I actually try to get my client to be as least rigid as possible, because I think with dieting, there's a very important psychological component too, right? And I've experienced this with multiple clients before, where they're making progress towards their goal and their weight's coming down, and they do their weekly check-in with me and they're like, I'm really frustrated with this week because these 2 days I went above my calories, and maybe they went over by 100 or 200 calories, and like their weight's still dropping. I'm like, hey, who who cares about that, right? If anything, that's a positive that shows that you can eat more and you can still make progress, right? So I'm very laid back with that. And then when it comes to the step count, I like giving them, and I like this recommendation on the physical activity component side of things, a daily minimum, right? Rather than giving them a target, like say, you must reach this number of steps. I'm like, hey, what is a minimum number of steps you can commit to, right? And the key word there is commit. Let's say they say 5,000. I'm right. All right, the minimum is 5,000. If you go above that, that's a win. And then one thing I really try to do is when I do check-ins with my clients and I'm going over their data, if I see that there's a couple of days where they did much more than what the minimum was, I really try to highlight them and applaud them for that to encourage that behavior moving forward, right? So the whole process is giving some basic general recommendations. And then when the client shows effort and goes beyond it, applauding that behavior so that they reinforce that behavior and then continuing that over time, at least with my clients, has been a really effective method of improving overall behaviors and improving mindset when it comes to dieting too. Because a lot of the people I've worked with before, it's not their first attempt at weight loss. You know? And I'm talking a lot about weight loss because a lot of my clients are specifically weight loss clients. And that rigidity, mental rigidity, really does lead to burnout, right? Of like, overall, the week went well, but I'm hyper-focusing on this one day because I ate some cookies. Like, not necessary, right? And that's why I was saying the coaching process when we were first talking, like, part of it is the recommendation, and there's like so much more to that as well that you kind of start to develop as you start to work with people. Now, talked about athletes who are competing, general population who may just want to lose weight. But I also work with individuals who are focused on building muscle, right? And the recommendations are slightly different. Actually, in terms of the caloric recommendations, I'm even a little bit more flexible there in the sense of like, I give them a general calorie target in terms of like being in a surplus to target a certain rate of weight gain. But we also know that when you are in a gaining phase and you're gaining muscle, at least for the general population, sometimes they don't want to be super rigid with their tracking, right? Because they're not trying to lose weight right now. They kind of want to be a little bit more flexible with their weight gain process, and they don't want to necessarily track every calorie. So usually what I explain to my clients is like, hey, the only negative side effect of perhaps gaining too quickly is that you're going to put on some excess body fat, right? But if you're okay with that, it's not going to negatively impact your ability to build muscle in any way. And you should feel confident that you have the skills necessary to lose the body fat after, right? So I'm pretty lenient on the caloric side of things for somebody who's trying to gain muscle. But then when it comes to the training side of things, I am pretty strict with my recommendations of what I want them to do on there.
Okay.
So training recommendations, I know there's a chapter on this as well, but usually do about a 6 to 8 week mesocycle where we increase intensity, increase volume, all of those variables. And essentially each mesocycle gives me information as to what's effective for that client, how much volume can they recover from, and how long of a cycle is long enough for them to make good progress, right? So with the training recommendations, I am a little bit more specific because if you want to gain muscle and you're serious about it, you can't really joke around with your training the same way. You can be a little bit more flexible with your diet, right? You really do need to be training hard. You need to be hitting the amount of volume. And hey, if you are eating some extra food, that should be theoretically a little bit more fuel to train a little bit harder, right? So overall, pretty flexible with nutrition stuff. Give a general range. For training, I do like being pretty specific with that.
All right. I've got one question because I know we're running up on towards the end of our time, but this question is really probably not the easiest to answer in a short amount of time, but is it possible to build muscle and to lose body fat at the same time?
Oh man, dude, this is a fantastic question. Okay. And I do a lot of work on social media as well. I release a lot of video content, and I actually recently released a video on YouTube titled, Can You Build Muscle and Gain Fat at the Same Time? And I'll give the general synopsis here because there's the short answer is yes in some specific situations. Okay. And I'll talk about what those specific situations are. I think here's why I say yes. When we look at the scientific literature, there are numerous studies that show that participants lose body fat and gain muscle. So there is scientific evidence that you can do what's called body recomp, right? Now, the question really is like, who can achieve it? And overall, it's thought there's really three types of individuals that can achieve it. And that is individuals who are new to lifting, right? because lifting itself is such a novel stimulus that you'll gain muscle. Two, individuals who are perhaps overweight or obese, since they have excess adiposity, perhaps are somewhat new at training too, they can lose some body fat because they have more body fat to lose, right? While maintaining or gaining muscle mass. Losing muscle only becomes an issue when you're dieting if you're already pretty lean, right? For the average person who has some body fat, isn't single-digit body fat, you're really not at risk of losing much muscle during a fat loss phase. And the more fat you have, the less at risk you are. And the third really like ideal person that would be able to achieve some degree of recomp is somebody who's already an experienced lifter, but perhaps they've taken some time off of lifting, right? And that's what we call being detrained. I won't go into the specific mechanisms of that, but essentially when you've been training for a while and you don't train, you do have what's called muscle memory. It's a real thing, right? You gain muscle at a much faster rate than expected. And it's essentially like you're getting those newbie gains all over again. So generally it's thought, unless you fit into one of these three categories, then you can't really achieve body recomp, right? But that's also not true in my opinion, or at least there's some caveats to those three instances, and I'll bring them up here.
Okay.
One of the studies in particular, which is an Antonio et al. Study, I forget the year it was published, showed body recomp in experienced lifters. And these individuals had at least 2 years of lifting experience. And it's like, all right, well, what's going on there? And we have to think about other variables that influence our ability to recover. Or, well, I shouldn't have said the word recover because I gave it up there, but our ability to build muscle. And one of those is recovery, right? If you're somebody who has been lifting for, I don't know, a couple of years, you're an experienced lifter, right? But perhaps you go out 3 times a week till 2 in the morning. You're only sleeping 5 or 6 hours. You're not really focusing on your nutrition. Yes, you're an experienced lifter, but you're not optimizing your recovery, right? And we all know that you don't gain muscle while you're training. You gain muscle while you're recovering. So I think the first caveat to those three instances is if you don't have optimal recovery, right? And even not optimal, if you can optimize some aspect of your recovery, you can theoretically improve your body composition without having to purposefully gain weight or lose weight, right? Ideally, you can do both simultaneously if you can slightly improve your recovery. And of course, it's a spectrum, right? If you're doing a lot of things incorrectly and you can improve various aspects of your recovery, then you can perhaps achieve a greater degree of recomp than somebody who's on the opposite side of that, right? Now, the second caveat, which I think is the biggest one, is that we tend to determine somebody's training experience or training status based on how long they've been training for. And that's not a good way to measure it either, right? Because if you go to a commercial gym, if you've been going to the same gym for several years, you'll notice people in there that have been going there for several years and they don't look any different, right? And that's because like to gain muscle, you do really need to train really hard, right? Like you need to train hard. It's uncomfortable. And a lot of people never get to the point where they're training hard. And then besides that, you need to make sure that you're training appropriately, which means that you need to have the knowledge of how to train appropriately, right? Appropriate exercise selection, exercise execution, technique, making sure you're doing the exercise properly for the outcome that you want to do, rep ranges, weight, fatigue management, all of those variables, right? So if your training isn't optimal, it doesn't matter how long you've been training for. If you optimize your training, you can achieve some degree of body recomp. And now when it comes to the general public, and here I'm going to venture to say the majority of the people that go to the gym, they don't train optimally, right? Because not everybody has the knowledge on how to train optimally. Even if they're training hard, right? They're probably not training optimally. So I think most people who go to the gym regularly, and of course, we're not talking about competitive athletes here, general population, most individuals who go to the gym can optimize either some aspect of their recovery, some aspect of their training, or both. And if you do, I think you can achieve some degree of body recomp, even if you've been going to the gym for several years consistently, because you're doing things in a more appropriate fashion, right? And I think one of the reasons why we see body recomp in the literature, in the scientific literature, is because of the environment you're in when you're being tested in the lab, right? You have to think about this. When you go into a lab to be tested for, or you're participating in a resistance training study, The individuals conducting the study know about lifting, right? So they're giving you an appropriate training program, or you would ideally hope that the training program is an effective training program. And when you're in the lab being tested, you have a group of usually PhD students, research assistants, and a professor, and they're all yelling at you like to encourage you to train hard, right? And the reason we do that is to account for extraneous variables like motivation across all participants, right? Because if you motivate one participant and then you don't motivate the next participant, that might play a role in terms of their performance, right? So to account for that, we motivate everybody, and we motivate everybody pretty hard, right? So what happens when you come to the lab? You're training usually harder than normal if you go to the commercial gym and you don't train that hard regularly, right? We've all experienced going to the gym with a friend. Usually you train a lot harder. If there's good music, if you're in a good atmosphere, that encourages you to train harder. Now, if you do that consistently over several sessions and you usually don't do that, you'll probably experience some body recomp because you're training harder, you're training optimally. So I think those are two huge caveats to whether or not you can achieve recomp. And I think everybody can achieve some degree of recomp. Now, the issue is people are like, can I indefinitely recomp, right? If I weigh 200 pounds right now and I'm 18% body fat, can I stay at this body weight and be 6% body fat? And the answer is no, right? Recomp is usually a short-term goal. You can improve your body composition to a degree doing both simultaneously. Now, if you want to maximize either of the outcomes, you do have to focus on them independently. I think recomp is more a reflection of, again, these variables, how you train, what your recovery is like, right? And again, you can improve some things to improve your body composition in the short term. And in the short term, you know, talking random numbers here, maybe within 9 months, 1 year, you can slowly improve your body composition. But when you get to a place that you're training optimally and your recovery is optimal and your progress is plateauing, there's not really much you can do to achieve more recomp. You can't just train harder and you can't just recover harder because those aren't real things, right? At which point you have to determine, like, what is my goal right now? Do I need more muscle or do I want to get leaner? And choose one or the other. And that's my short answer.
Nice. I like it. Well, do us a favor. Give us your social media handles, your YouTube channel, things like that, if people want to follow you and continue to learn from you.
Appreciate you, man. Yeah, I'm on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. It's all Dr. Joey Munoz, Dr. Joey M-U-N-O-Z. And I post educational content pretty much on a daily basis. So if you guys enjoyed this talk, definitely give me a follow. And I look forward to interacting with you guys on there.
Amazing. Dr. Munoz, thank you so much for being here with us and sharing your knowledge with our audience. I want to say thank you to the audience for being here and listening and being part of it. Like, subscribe, share with your friends and fitness family. I appreciate it. If you want to reach out to me, you could do so. You can hit me up on Instagram at dr.rickritchie or email me at rick.ritchie@nasm.org. Thanks for listening. Keep inspiring people to fitness. This has been the NASM CPT Podcast.